Welcome to the Gay Podcast for Everyone, a podcast where my LGBTQ plus community and our allies can come together in conversation and keep building stronger ones together. Whether you're in the LGBTQ plus fam or you're an ally, welcome. This is the Gay Podcast for Everyone.
It's been 10 years, and something that I've learned throughout that time is that, like, it took me a long time to be okay with my sexuality. So I can't expect for my family or my loved ones to be okay quickly, right? And so me having that realization helped me so much. And the fact that our mom still kind of like feels weird about it, but she has grown so much. And there's so many religious, cultural, generational, and socioeconomic differences between her and I. And the fact that she has grown so much, it's like a testament, even though it's not ideal where I would love for her to be, like, I'm still really happy and grateful. And it really doesn't bother me that we're in different places in terms of how she views sexuality because, again, of that privilege that I have.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Angela Briones. I'm your host. And the focus of today's episode is sibling relationships and their impact on our coming out journey and our impact on their allyship. Today's guests are two siblings who are the host of the finance podcast called Money Noticias. Israel and Sunem Tovar are first-generation Latina siblings who use their voice on their podcast to help others achieve financial freedom and get their money right. Today's episode is obviously not going to be about money or finance, but if you've listened to their podcast, you know that their dynamic is so fun and so supportive. And that's why I asked them to join me today, to talk about having the support of our siblings and our family as we live out and proud. To me, this episode is a celebration of sibling relationships, and I hope it will inspire you and meet you wherever you are in your journey with your sibling and with your family in general. And although our lens in this episode is one of our Latina community, the topics we discuss are universal. Whether the topic is about allyship or money or LGBTQ related, in order to share our story, we have to learn how to share our voice so that we can make an impact. And there are so many different factors that affect that. From things that affect our confidence to speak out as an LGBTQ person or as an ally, to building the financial privileges that allow us to leave spaces that are not supportive environments. Yeah, we get into a lot of things, you guys. There's a lot of gems in this episode. Israel, who you heard in the opening clip, is an openly gay man who built a six-figure net worth on a teacher's salary by the age of 26. And he earned degrees from Yale and Stanford, where he got full rides, by the way. And Sunem holds a master's in finance and has also built a six-figure investment portfolio. They are impressive in so many ways. This is Sunem and Israel Tovar. On the podcast today, I have Israel and Sunem Tovar with me, the Latina siblings behind Money Noticias podcast. So thank you guys for being here. I appreciate it.
Angela, thank you so much for having us here today. We're so excited to have this conversation with you.
Thanks. So I wanted to tell you guys that I really do appreciate you being here because this isn't a finance podcast, right? I didn't invite you here to talk about the usual topic that you talk about, even though on your podcast, I feel like you guys let us into your personal story. You know, you let us into your personal journey. But this is still a different type of personal story too. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share it. But I wanted to ask you, Israel, you guys have six siblings, right? And you and Sunem are the youngest of the six. You are the quote unquote baby of the family. You talk so often about how Sunem will do something and kind of influence you in a good way. It's like she'll start something like with the finance journey. You know, she started on this finance journey and started this interest. And then you kind of didn't tag along, I wouldn't say, but you were influenced, right? Did you always have that dynamic between you two?
So I would like to start by saying, yes, I am the baby of the family. I am, you know, the youngest, the tallest too. Okay, I'm really tall. I'm 6'3". And I always like to say that I'm also the cutest, in case you were wondering. Okay, I'm just kidding. So yeah, Sunem did influence me significantly on my personal finance journey. And I'm so grateful and really, really privileged, to be quite honest, that I had her as my sister. Because if I didn't have her as my sister, then I think my financial journey would have looked so differently. I think in terms of our sibling dynamic overall, I don't think you would influence me that much. I think it was mostly like us fighting because, you know, Sunim would always start the fight. I always say this, Sunim always starts the fight. Even though everyone thinks that I'm the one who starts it, it's always Sunim. Okay, I just want to make that very clear.
So now we know.
Sunim, do you have anything else to add about that?
I don't think I influenced you growing up. It started like maybe like in our mid-20s where I started to influence you more, like when it comes to like personal finance and also skincare, because you know, yes. You trust me that yes. I'm going to do the research for you. And so I think that has developed recently, but I don't think before it was the same dynamic because I don't think I used to do research as much as I do now. I don't think you trusted me that much before.
Yeah. And I think ever since we started our platform, I think we've just been informing each other more about like our progress and our lives. And I think that has brought us together more. We're influencing each other a little bit more because of that. But historically, no, we didn't have that dynamic at all. It was just like a regular schmegler sibling dynamic, the babies in the family, right?
That's awesome. So like, at what point did you say we should do a podcast?
So I think we first wanted to do a podcast when we first started creating content on Instagram. I think that was in late 2021, I believe. And we didn't really, like, it took us a long time to actually get it started. I don't know why, like, we were just like, oh, I don't know if we're going to be good podcasters. And also because I'm an introvert. So for me, like, being on podcasts was really challenging because I felt like I was so much in my head in the beginning. I'm like, I don't know if I'm saying the correct things. But because I do edit my podcast now that I listen to them, I'm like, oh, that was actually pretty good. So yeah, it took me a long time in Israel too for us to actually create a podcast because it just felt like it was so much work. Like, oh, you have to learn how to edit, you have to get all this tech and you know, all these things that we didn't know. But like, we slowly started doing it, and we also had like a business coach who was really helpful in motivating us to get it started, and then we finally did it. And honestly, it wasn't that hard as we thought it was.
Yeah, so I think one of the major reasons why we also wanted to start a podcast is because we wanted to connect more intimately with the people that we were engaging with online. We realized that our stories on Instagram, our content on Instagram, wasn't really showing our true personalities and, you know, just connecting more on a personal level with the folks who we work with, right? And so we figured that having a podcast is going to give us the platform and the ability to be able to do that more effectively.
That's awesome. And I agree with you. Like, there's a connection, you know, and like that engagement that you feel with people. I think the biggest thing is, like, we were talking just before we started, even though you guys are so much younger than me, I feel like I'm able to learn so much from you because you guys are a reflection of my own community. You know, it's like, in a weird way, it feels like family. And I hope that that's a compliment.
I'm so happy you say that because that's something that we really wanted to do because we're building wealth together as siblings. We wanted our podcast to be about like building wealth as a family and as a community. And so that's why when we record solo episodes, we try to talk about our chisme. Yeah. So that way, like, it connects people and lets them know more about our story.
I do love that you start your podcast with, you know, your tea. I love that.
We also love sharing our tea. We also love sharing our tea. So it's both ways.
That's awesome. So Sunim, let me ask you, since, you know, we're on the gay podcast for everyone, let me preface this with, there's no wrong answer, because my sister knew I was gay well before I knew I was gay. And when I came out to her, it took me 4 hours to come out to her. And the entire time she sat there like, please say it. And I could not get the words out. And when I finally did, she was like, I know, let's go. Because we were at a Starbucks. And she was like, can we go now? And I was like, oh, okay. And that's it. She was like, I was just waiting for you to know. Was that the same with you guys, or was it totally different, or what was the story there?
So I guess part of me kind of knew, but because we grew up in a really hardcore Christian environment, it was kind of hard for me to actually think about it because that was not the norm. But when Israel came out to me and he told me, I was like, okay, I was like really supportive, and it didn't really change our relationship at all.
Nice. Yeah. And then after we're like, girl, you knew I loved Mean Girls. Like, you know, gay flag, number one, right? Yeah. All my little friends were girlfriends. You know, like it was just in hindsight, it's like very, very evident, right? Like very evident. But obviously because of just the homophobia and heteronormativity, not only in our community, but just in the world in general, like it's harder for, and it also because, I mean, I think the culture has changed some since I came out back in almost 10 years ago now, but it was still like changing a little bit in the sense of like, there weren't as many people out as there are today, right? I feel like systemically, queer and trans people are still very much discriminated and there's a lot of systemic barriers to this day, but I think there's a bit more representation in the media and there's more, you know, folks out than before. And so it was harder to fathom back then for a sibling to be queer, right? So I, now in hindsight, so now, you know, I fully am super gay, right? Like, flaming homosexual here, right? I'm a joto, like, I'm reclaiming that term. Like, when I was a teacher, I had my Mexican flag and my pride flag, and everyone and their mama knows that I'm queer. And if they don't know, I will let them know that I am, you know, somehow, one way or another.
It's interesting you say that. Well, both of these things, like, I don't even know which one to talk about first, because Sunim, you brought up the fact that, like, you know, the family dynamic of being rooted in just like a certain culture, you know, in a certain religion. I think that is part of our culture, right? And also a part of that, ironically enough, I think is for us, you know, as women, a part of the culture is like not to, I don't want to say not to speak. But it's that whole, like, you know, be quiet, you know, you're praised and acknowledged when you're quiet. And so when you talked about the podcast thing, being scared to like share your voice on the podcast, or you're introverted or what have you, like that's, you know, something that's kind of rooted in our culture. And then also, Israel, when you talk about 10 years ago, there wasn't the visibility we have now. I think about all the, you know, the leaps and bounds that my own family has made in the last 10, 15 years, you know, as far as like being comfortable even saying the word gay, to be honest with you. So like there's so many topics and I don't know which one to start with, but maybe we'll start with the podcast one, you know, sharing your voice, Sunim, like, because I imagine, Israel, that that was not a case for you.
No, it was not the case for me. I'm a chatter. Okay. I'd be yapping and yapping. I think I was a little bit more introverted when I was in high school, but when I went to college and then I explored my sexuality, I was away from home and I was empowered in my voice in college. Then I kind of became just the extroverted person that I am today. And as a teacher, I was just always yapping and yapping. So it was definitely not hard for me.
That's true. The teaching space is probably a space where you're like more comfortable just talking. I feel like I'm a little more like Sunim. When you said worry to say the wrong thing, absolutely. Like I resonate with that so much. That is exactly how I feel. A lot of times I'm trying to think about what I'm going to say before I'm going to say it. And then I'm like you, I edit my podcast too. So I'm able to hear what I'm going to say. And definitely in the beginning, I was like, oh, this is not good or whatever. But I learned, you know, I learned from it. But I realized so much of it is because I felt like I was conditioned to be so careful about what I was going to say. There's certain things you don't talk about, right? Yes. And so then the gay was definitely a topic that I felt like I couldn't talk about. And, you know, when I finally came out to my sister and stuff, I mean, it was all just like really, really slow, you know, but it was, there was progress, but it was really slow. And so much of it was just rooted in fear. And I don't know if, Israel, did you have the same kind of fears though? Like, was Sunim the first person you told in your family?
So I definitely had those fears. It was so interesting for me is that when I started to grapple with my sexuality is when the same summer that I moved to Nashville from LA. And not only did I have to grapple with my sexuality because I hit puberty then exactly that summer. And then I had to grapple with my racial identity. And I had to grapple with like so many other things that were really, really hard for me as a 12-year-old. And so I kind of like ignored it, but I know subconsciously, and Sunim and I were just talking about this, like one of the reasons why I did so well academically was because I knew that I was really good at school and I knew that getting a full ride was going to be my exit ticket away from poverty, away from the South, and also to explore my sexuality. And when I got to college, I went to Yale for undergrad. And I don't know if y'all know this, but Yale is a very, it's known as the gay Ivy. It's like very, I think gay specifically, not queer, gay specific, like gay cis men. And a lot of the Latino men who were involved with the Latina Cultural Center on campus, and I was really involved with the center, tended just to be gay or queer. And so it became normalized to be gay. And then I developed a strong community. I was taking classes around queer and trans theory, you know, being equipped with the language to talk about my racial identity, my queer identity. And I was financially privileged, independent from my family. And I was away and I was in a relationship at that time. And so I feel like I was able to come out to my family because I had gained a lot of privilege, right? I had gained a lot of privilege. And so regardless of how they're going to react, obviously that was going to impact me. But I'm like, at the end of the day, I have privilege already. So even to this day, I still grapple with where I live, and some of the challenges I have is because of that intersection of being gay, but also being a Mexican, but also being very, very privileged. And so I came out to my family the summer of 2014. So it's about to be 10 years. And it was easy for some of them, and it was really challenging for others, right? But it's been 10 years. And something that I've learned throughout that time is that, like, it took me a long time to be okay with my sexuality. So I can't expect for my family or my loved ones to be okay quickly, right? And so me having that realization helped me so much. And the fact that our mom still kind of like feels weird about it, but she has grown so much. And there's so many religious, cultural, generational, and socioeconomic differences between her and I. And the fact that she has grown so much is like a testament, even though it's not ideal where I would love for her to be, like I'm still really happy and grateful. And it really doesn't bother me that we're in different places in terms of how she views sexuality because, again, of that privilege that I have, right? And the last thing I'm going to say, because I know I like to talk a lot. One of the reasons why I also feel a lot of empathy for communities of color who are homophobic is because of the histories that we experience. Like prior to European colonization, indigenous communities all over the world tended to be more just and would embrace different gender identities and sexualities. And then with the colonization of Europeans imposing upon Christianity and all these other harmful ways of thinking and of living your life, that's when a lot of our communities began to develop homophobia. And now there's this gaslighting that happens because it's like, oh, why the West and modern and European and frankly white countries are like, why can't these developing countries be as progressive? It's because of you're the ones who imposed upon us these ideologies around gender and sexuality. And now you're gaslighting us for it. So I have a lot of empathy with communities of color who are homophobic when I was a teacher. A lot of empathy for my students, right? I still have those conversations, but even to this day, I have empathy for my family, even though my family's in a whole different space now in terms of that, but with our communities more broadly, I'm still very empathetic.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to pause the podcast just real quick to tell you about something that I think is really important to all of us, showing our pride and sharing our allyship. And the easiest way to do that is to wear something that symbolizes it. And that's why I want to tell you about one of my favorite jewelry lines, Laura Elizabeth. Laura Elizabeth is sustainably, ethically made jewelry for women by women. And more than that, Laura Elizabeth is an ally of the LGBTQ+ community and a good friend of this podcast. A few years ago, a grandmother named Pauline reached out to Laura Elizabeth to help design some jewelry that would represent support for her grandson, Ricky, who had been bullied at school for being gay. Pauline wanted help designing pieces that would show support for Ricky and our LGBTQ+ community. And in response, Laura Elizabeth created two rainbow acceptance designs, each named after Pauline and Ricky. As we head towards Pride Month, now is the perfect time to show your love and acceptance of your loved one. And when you purchase one of these pieces, a percentage of the proceeds benefits Austin Out Youth, a nonprofit organization in Austin, Texas, that supports LGBTQIA+ youth and young adults. Laura will actually be a guest on this podcast next month during Pride Month to share more about the Ricky and Pauline necklaces, and I can't wait to share that story with you. In the meantime, help spread the love by wearing what you believe and represent. So head to LauraElizabethJewelry.com and get your acceptance necklaces in time for Pride. You bring up a really good point about the privilege to come out right? So many wonderful gems that you just dropped, because one of them is exactly what this podcast is about. It's about a parent's journey in taking their own journey, really. I think we need to recognize that they also need to kind of have that same process, sort of, in their own way, you know, like their journey starts, you know, hopefully together, hopefully, because it's not going to change. We're going to be gay or queer or trans, however we identify. Whether somebody does or doesn't support it is not going to change the reality. And then you also said something that I'm going to edit this out, by the way, because I have to just read my own writing. No, that was it. I had everything. but Sunim, did you feel like you had your own journey too afterwards? You said you already kind of had an idea. So was it even a thing?
I think I did have my own journey, but I like accepted him fully when he told me, just because, you know, he's my brother and I loved him. But it did take me a few years to like to read more about it and like to ask him, like, if I say this thing, is this harmful to you? Because I didn't know. And so, yeah, it took me a few years, but it was never about like, oh, I don't accept my brother. Like, no, that was never like right away when he told me, I was like, okay, I love you. I'm always going to accept you the way you are.
Yeah. I think that's so important to have that relationship where you can ask somebody, like, if I say this, is it, you know, quote unquote, wrong, or is it offensive or whatever? Because otherwise we don't know. We just don't. Israel, I heard you say on your podcast, I believe, or maybe you were a guest on somebody else's podcast. I listen to so many finance podcasts that sometimes I'll know it was you chatting, but I'm like, was it on their podcast or somebody else's? But anyway, you said as a teacher, you know, you were an example of a gay man in that space as well, you know, and you knew that people were watching you. So on your podcast, do you guys feel that same responsibility, or do you feel the same responsibility of like making sure you're not only speaking to, you know, the Latina community, but also the LGBTQ community as well? Does that kind of tie into like the topics you do or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I always lead with a very intersectional lens, right? And the analysis that I provide and the thought processes that I have and the conversations that I hold. Mm-hmm. We have intentionally made some podcast conversations around queer and trans money issues specifically, and had queer and trans people of color talk about money and their money journeys. We've been very intentional about that. Mm-hmm. But just in our analysis of just, you know, all of it, we bring up sexism, the patriarchy, racism, classism, capitalism, homophobia. So, for example, we're currently doing a series about romance, right? Mm-hmm. And so for romance, we always make sure, like, in a heteronormative relationship, right? We always say it's different for queer and trans people. Like, we make sure that we kind of stretch out that nuance, because it's really important to talk about it, right? But we also talk about like how it's really important to acknowledge that women of color get paid less, right, than a white man. And so we always lead with an intersectional lens, because our community is very intersectional.
Yeah. Sunim, I had a question for you back when you were chatting about, you know, being more introverted or what have you. Do you think any of that comes from like the way we're raised as a culture, just to kind of be a little more quiet? Because I feel like it did for me, and it made it really hard to share my voice. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sharing my voice as a gay podcaster. So it was like two things for me. But for you, just sharing your voice in general, did it impact it at all?
That's actually a really interesting question that I have never really thought about. Sorry. About me being introverted because of the culture. But honestly, like now that I'm thinking about it, it can be, because I remember like when I would go visit my tios and tias, like my dad would always like, and my grandma would tell me like to just be quiet and listen to them speak. And so maybe for me, I like was able, like I got that, and that's why I became introverted. But it might also be like genetics, because I think my mom is more in the introverted side. But also I think another reason why sometimes I can be more introverted is because I do also suffer from like anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety. And so that's when like my head is always has so many dots. And so maybe like that's another reason why I became introverted. But like, because I am going to therapy, I was able to like get all these tools to help me put myself out there and even start the podcast, because I'm like, okay, well, even if I'm scared, I can still show up. Like, I'm not gonna die. I'm gonna be okay, even though I feel a little anxious. I'm gonna be okay. But yeah, I think it does stem from all of that.
Yeah, I think it impacts it.
And I also feel like, Sunem, we've had conversations informally how like, and I really did notice it when I was a teacher, how like the world just values people who are extroverted, right? And so teachers and just the world really just want to foster the voices of people who are extroverted and not necessarily introverted people, right? But then also something that I noticed that has impacted me, and I'm sure you in different ways, it's like when you go to predominantly like white institution too, and you're first gen and you're a woman of color, right? You feel more uncomfortable, especially you, because you did your master's in finance and it was mostly white men. You do feel more uncomfortable like speaking up, because you're like, you're the only one in your whole program, and it's mostly white men, you know, being represented and hearing the voices of white men. So maybe subconsciously, we also, depending on our identities, like we also internalize these ideas that we should not listen to our voices because we feel discomfort because the status quo is the white man's voice, you know, in the spaces that we've inhabited.
Yeah, that is so true. And something that I've been telling myself now is like, I can advocate for myself, and that means using my voice. And something that has like, I know that there's some topics like I will talk even though I'm an introverted, like for example, like money. I love talking about money, but also like if there's like a sexism comment, like I will talk. Like people will be like, oh, I didn't know she was introverted, but that's because I like those topics really, I'm really passionate about.
I feel like I'm somewhere in between, and it's like ambivert, which I didn't even realize was a thing until recently. And I was like, oh, that's totally me, you know. There are these moments I'm like chit-chatty and just total extrovert. But then there's other times when I'm like, oh, that was a lot. I've got to, you know, just chill.
Decompress. Yeah.
Yes. I really feel like that whole cultural aspect, at least for me, like really affected my voice, really being afraid to share my voice. And then even as a gay person, I'm not as like overt as you are, Israel, about, you know, my gayness. I want to be, but a lot of times I'm fearful too. Like the world is kind of scary, you know, and I never know who's around or whatever. And unfortunately, that's just fact of where we are right now, you know.
Yeah, I will say that I think the fact that I'm so overt also stems from more privilege, because I'm a man, right? Like I'm a cis man and I'm really tall. And I think that really helps me be more overt with my sexuality. And so I think that like this idea of safe also is really much informed by privilege. And I think that I have been able to like garner my students' respect and people's respect because I'm a tall man, right? Yeah. And so I think that really does help me be more overt with my sexuality.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All those things I think have an impact. Sunem, as a sibling of an LGBTQ person, has your idea of allyship and stuff changed? I don't know. Just has it changed in like a more progressive way? Do you know what I mean? Like, has it developed further?
Yeah. So yeah, it has definitely changed from the beginning. I try to inform myself more. And like I said, I always ask Israel, like, is this the correct way and stuff like that? So I like informing myself has really helped me being an ally to the LGBTQ community.
And I think that in my family, I make sure that I normalize just being gay. I feel like it's just become so normal, right? So now, I mean, at least from my perspective, I just normalize it so much. And I mean, also, I lean into queer theory, and I firmly believe, and this may be controversial, that like a lot of people are queer. It's just because of heteronormativity, we're not allowed to explore sexuality because sexuality is on a spectrum, right? And so my siblings have seen in action how other people are queer, you know what I'm saying, like around me too. And so it's kind of been like so normalized. It's like, yeah, Israel is gay, but it's like, at least from my perspective, and maybe I don't know if I'm speaking incorrectly, but I think it's super normalized because I actively bring it up and I make sure that it's normal that I talk about just queerness and and the dynamics.
Yeah. I kind of try to do the same thing too. My sister really does help a lot with so much of it because, like, a lot of times, let's say, for example, my parents will talk about marriage, which wasn't always a given for our community, right? And, like, I remember where I was when it became legal, you know, that type of thing. And sometimes I just always have to remind them that I don't always have the same privileges. And that's what I'm hoping we're all working towards, you know, because I know that their lens is a straight lens and it's straight lens of privilege. I'm so glad that you brought up that word because it's like financial privilege and, you know, the different types of privilege, right? In different circumstances. And I just feel like sometimes I do have to remind them that things aren't as easy for the gay community as it is for, you know, the heterosexual community.
Yeah, heterosexual. Yeah.
Heterosexual, I'm like, yes. What word am I trying to say? but yeah, it's the same thing. You know, I'm always kind of just trying to have this conversation. My sister is great. That's why I really wanted to have you guys on the podcast because your dynamic is so awesome. You know, talking about finance, talking about your personal stories and stuff. And it reminded me so much of the dynamic I have with my own sibling, you know, talking about money and our money journey and our financial journey. And she's the person who I go to for everything, you know? So like you guys really reminded me of that. So I appreciate it.
I have a question. Is your sister older than you or younger?
No, she's 7 years younger. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Which is like, I read that like that year difference, the 7 years is like, we're only children, basically, you know, or at least I am, I think. Like, I think it affects the older child more, you know, because we just had a big age difference. So when I left for college, I think she was in middle school, and it really affected her because she was really young, you know, and her sister's leaving. And, you know, I didn't even pay attention. I was like, bye, see y'all later, you know, whatever.
That was me. I was like, bye.
Yeah. So I didn't even pay attention. And, like, it really affected her. Well, I just think that this sibling dynamic in general, like especially just for anybody, it's not because we're gay, you know, and whatever, but I'm just saying like this sibling dynamic is just so, it's a privilege. And again, another privilege. Not everybody is close with their sibling, but I can say, and I think you feel the same way, Israel, like being a gay person, having my sister be the first person in my family I came out to, having my sister be my biggest advocate, my biggest ally, like bigger than anybody else. It's so meaningful when you have your family and your siblings in your corner, you know? And I really wanted to invite you guys here to talk about that and to talk about your dynamic because I think it's really special and I wanted to share that with other people.
Yeah, I'm really grateful. I'm really privileged that I do have the love and support of my family, you know? And for me, like I've always been so family oriented. Like I always say, I always come back to dusty, crusty Nashville. I'm sorry if you're from Nashville, but for me, it's dusty and crusty because my family is here. Even when I went away for college, I would always come back so often for every break that I had. When I left for grad school, when I left for DC, I'm leaving again now. And I know that I'm always going to come back because I love my family. And I think that's very much informed by culture, right? Because I feel like as Latinas, we're very collectivist, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that I do have that love and support because I love my family a lot and it would be really challenging if I didn't. But, you know, like another thing that a lot of queer and trans people have to do is like have chosen family because a lot of families, unfortunately, do not support them. And chosen families can be just as beautiful and loving as a biological family. And so I'm really grateful for all queer and trans people who have family, whether it's biological and or chosen.
Really good point. Yes, that is a really good point. Going back to Nashville, by the way, I like Nashville. I liked it.
No, I love visiting. Like I would say I love visiting. I just personally have a very complicated relationship with Nashville because I moved here when I was 12 and I had to grapple with my racial identity and my queer, like I hit puberty that summer. And I think me being based here, like this city doesn't, even though it's grown, it doesn't have the infrastructure to support someone like me. I feel like I'm not miserable here. Mm-hmm. I'm just not thriving the way I have thrived in other cities. And if I have the privilege to do that because other cities have the infrastructure because of the advocacy that happened there in the past, you know, our ancestors who pushed for bars and legislation and all the, like, a safer environment, like, why wouldn't I, right? And so I feel like I still love Nashville. Like, I just know it's a city that can't help me thrive, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that it's not a great city for someone else. It just means that it's not a city for me to be based in, but a city for me to come and visit often.
That's such a good point too, because, like, even, I mean, it's different now, but when I was younger, I'm from Austin, and it's a pretty, you know, keep Austin weird. It's ideally a good city to be gay in, right? But when I was just coming out to myself and stuff, there was like one gay, it's not even a bar or a club. It was like a communal space. I mean, I guess technically it was a bar or club, but it didn't feel like that. Do you know what I mean? But what I couldn't wait to do, which I did later, was move to New York. There was a city that I could be myself in, an entire city, not just a building where I walked in and was surrounded by people who were, you know, speaking the same language, if you will, you know? And so I couldn't wait to move to New York so that I could just be myself, you know? I totally get you on the whole Nashville thing and, like, the privilege to be able to leave. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, you guys, before we end the podcast, first of all, I want to thank you for your time. Number one, it's awesome. But as far as money noticias, what's ahead for you guys? Any plans? Anything big you can share with me? I don't know. What ideas do you have going forward? I want the tea.
So we are continuing to release new episodes every Monday. But something that we've been wanting to do is to do like a live podcast recording. So this is new. Nobody knows. It's a tea. We're dropping it here. We've been trying to plan that. And that's something that we've never done before. So obviously, well, I'm excited, but also a little, you know, nervous because, you know, talking in front of people, it's going to be something else. But we're really excited to do that just because that feels like something that, I mean, like, to have like an audience and you actually see people there and then they can ask you questions, that would be really interesting. So we're excited for that.
That's so awesome. Do you know about when you want to do it, or is it still kind of too new to have planned a date or like a roundabout? I just want to know when to get my plane ticket. No. I'm just kidding.
Okay, we love that. No, so it's just like kind of like, you know, a half baked idea, but you're getting the what's the term? The behind the scenes tea or the offline tea.
I feel very
tea,
VIP right now. I feel very VIP. Thank you. That's awesome.
There we go. VIP moment. So for folks who want to listen to or can find us on any of the major podcast platforms, the one that you're listening to this podcast to, and we kind of hinted, we talk about money. We are very anti-racist, anti-capitalist. We have an intersectional lens. We want to teach folks how to use money to live life on their own terms and to improve our relationship with money, because we know that a lot of folks in our communities, unfortunately, have experienced a lot of money trauma and have unhealthy relationships with money, not because of our fault, just because of systemic issues. And so we make sure that we always center that lens and we equip you with tools and perspective to be able to just build wealth for ourselves, for our families, because we deserve a better life.
I love that. So look for the Money Noticias podcast. Israel and Sunem Tovar, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me on today's podcast. If you liked today's episode, please share it with someone who will get value from it as well. And please head to Apple Podcasts to rate and review this podcast so that our LGBTQ+ community and friends can find it. Thanks again, everyone. Until next time.